from KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Rachel Miro, sitting in for Dave Iverson. This hour, a package of bills pending in Sacramento would expand what healthcare providers who are not doctors can provide to patients. The Affordable Care Act is about to expand the number of Californians eligible for healthcare coverage, but there's a doctor shortage in many parts of this state, especially in poor and rural communities. That said, physician groups are lobbying against the legislation, warning it won't deliver on its promise and could permanently establish two classes of care in this state based on where you live and who you can afford to see. That's coming up on Forum after this. This is Forum. I'm Rachel Miro in for Dave Iverson. California has a shortage of physicians, especially in rural areas, a problem which could grow acute under federal health care reform. The state legislature is considering expanding the services that can be provided by nurse practitioners, pharmacists, and optometrists. But the proposals face opposition by physicians, who warn it could hurt the quality of care. Joining us this morning to talk about the issue, we have Paul Finney, a Sacramento-based pediatrician and the president of the California Medical Association. Thank you for being here with us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
And we also have on the line Senator Ed Hernandez, a Democrat from West Covina in L.A. County, who authored the legislation that would expand the scope of practice for various health practitioners. He's also, we should mention, an optometrist by training. Thank you for being here with us.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate the invitation.
So, Senator, I figure because these are your proposals, let's start with you. You're pushing three bills. Each one would expand services for different categories, nurse practitioners, optometrists, pharmacists. Is it fair to say at this point in the legislative session that one is on ice and two are in the saucepan?
Well, not necessarily. One of the bills, the optometry bill, I have decided to turn into a two-year bill. We're going to hear that sometime in January to give myself a little bit more time to work with the legislature to articulate those arguments. One bill, which is the pharmacy bill, got out of BNP this week.
BNP being?
Which is the Business and Professions Committee, so I do apologize. And it's on its way to the Health Committee. The nurse practitioner bill, we were short two votes. We have what's called reconsideration for that particular committee. It will be heard next week, Tuesday, and I'm confident that we will be able to get that bill out. And if we get it out, then it'll go to appropriations.
When you say get them out of committee, that means winning over votes that you don't have in your pocket yet. What kind of amendments have you had to make to allay some of the concerns people have about these bills?
Well, one of the members, Assemblymember Gordon, approached me. He said he'd like to work with me. We're currently working on some of his concerns. I have a few other members that have showed great, that they wanted to talk as well. So our offices are currently, we haven't really fleshed out all of the details, but hopefully by Tuesday, which is, sometime next week, we'll be able to determine that.
And just for the benefit of people who may be asking, aren't most of these healthcare providers licensed to provide a lot of basic, what we would call primary care already? Why do we need these bills?
Well, if you look at the current healthcare system that we have right now, not only in the United States, but particularly in California, we do have a shortage of primary care physicians, and in two areas in particular, as you mentioned in your intro, one in the rural area, but the other in the inner cities, but predominantly in the communities of color. So we have a strained system as it is, and as physicians graduate from medical school, only one-third of them go into primary care, and two-thirds go into specialty care. And of those that go into primary care, there is a maldistribution of where they do or where they tend to have a tendency to practice. So let's fast forward to what's going to happen literally in months from now in 2014 with the implementation of the Affordable Care Act and how California is taking a leadership role in its implementation. You're now going to be expecting 4.5 to 5 million new Californians that are going to be accessing the healthcare system, and 1.5 million of those are going to be on Medi-Cal, and the neediest individuals and individuals in those particular communities are going to have a huge access problem to primary care. So what I've done is we've done a series of committee hearings to address the workforce shortage. This is just one part of it. to utilize providers within their scope of training to increase their scopes of practice to allow them to become more utilized in primary care to work in collaboration with physicians.
So, Paul Finney, as you're listening to this description, does it strike you as fair? What concerns does it raise for you?
Well, let me just frame the situation from the physician standpoint. California physicians, and I'm one of them, I've worked as a physician for 30 years, strongly supported the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, because it promised to expand access to health care coverage while it's at the same time ensuring high quality of medical practice in our state. We feel that those who now invoke the Affordable Care Act as a justification for allowing non-physicians to diagnose and treat California patients and perform complex medical procedures on them are attempting to achieve one goal while undermining the other. We absolutely agree that there is an access problem in our state, and as we bring millions more Californians under coverage, we need to figure out ways to provide that access. But by allowing nurse practitioners to practice independently fragments care and does not really achieve the goals that you're trying to accomplish. We do not feel that the expansion of scope will increase access, but that there are better ways to do that. There are also, and that's basically the way to do that is to have physicians and nurse practitioners working in collaboratively in teams that can help to make sure that the quality and safety of care is there and that the level of training and experience over time can actually increase as nurse practitioners collaborate with physicians in providing care and do so more safely, effectively, and efficiently.
Well, let me break in there. Complex medical procedures like what?
Well, let's make it simple and keep it in primary care. I'm a pediatrician, and again, I've been in practice as a doctor for 30 years. And one of the common complaints that or problems that comes into a primary care pediatric setting is a young child or a toddler with a knee pain. Now, knee pain can be a sprain or a turned knee. It can also be a bone tumor, which might be a benign tumor. It could be a very aggressive osteoblastic sarcoma. The tens of thousands of more hours of training that physicians have as compared to nurse practitioners allows us to consider an expanded differential and know when we have to worry and when we don't have to worry about a complaint as simple as knee pain, which is actually very, very common. A nurse practitioner is not fully equipped with the training to consider as wide a differential and may get into trouble with that sort of a situation.
Well, we want to hear from listeners, especially if you're a doctor or a nurse, a pediatrician, a pharmacist, an optometrist. Give us a ring and weigh into the conversation. Tell us what you think. Tell us what your questions are for the senator and, well, actually, I guess they're both doctors, for both doctors. 866-733-6786 is the number to call. And now that you have your pen at the ready, 866-733-6786. We're also taking emails, forum@kqed.org. With that, let's go to the phones. We have somebody in San Jose. Jeff, you're on the line.
Hi. I had two comments. The first one was I know that a lot of times when legislators look at issues, they try to frame them, as objectively as they can. And I know sometimes, you'll make columns on two sides of comparison. One of the things that I've noticed is the educational differences, kind of piggyback on what was just mentioned, on paper look similar. For example, there might be X number of years of chemistry. I have noticed, however, that the training that or the chemistry that may be required for, let's say, a nursing degree as opposed to the pre-medical coursework that is required of doctors is not the same level. And so even though, for example, they might look similar, the actual requirements are significantly different. And it's not just the chemistry, it's a number of other things. And that isn't to say, certainly, that the undergraduate or lower division material is, unnecessary or at a particular level may make a difference in them getting the you know, that kind of basic training that they require. Most of the training, I understand, is done on the job anyway. But I do know that in a lot of cases, a more fundamental understanding of what may be happening under, you know, underlying a situation may also provide additional insights that might not otherwise be available. So in that sense, I understand and I recognize that the training that physicians receive is substantially more in-depth. That does concern me.
So let's put that then to Senator Hernandez. The point Jeff is making, I mean, you know, yes, everybody receives a great deal of very sophisticated education going into the health field, but doctors receive more.
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And let's also talk about the complex medical procedures that Dr. Finney had mentioned. I will be the first to admit, yes, a physician has a lot more training than a nurse practitioner does, just like a surgeon, just like a specialist, just like a neurologist, just like a cardiologist. But what we're saying and what I'm saying is that the education that the nurse practitioner has for what they are currently allowed to do in the state of California, and understand that this piece of legislation is only going to allow them to do what they're currently allowed in the state of California. The only difference is to do it independently, that educational level that they have and the service that they provide in primary care, not in any kind of specialty or complex medical procedures, they are just as qualified. But also the most important thing that we need to look at, and I think it's incumbent upon the legislature, but more importantly the policymakers, to look at sound scientific data and decades of information and body of information that shows that nurse practitioners, for what we're proposing, can provide safe primary care. 17 states in the United States currently allow nurse practitioners to have what is called independent practice. There are more and more states right now in the United States that are actually implementing or trying to implement laws to do so. And I think there are specific states that are actually, their governors are actually looking at as using these for ways to increase access to care to address the primary care shortage. And if you look at the studies and the body of evidence that's out there right now, with, as I mentioned, decades of studies, it shows that they not only are capable, but it sometimes have better outcomes, better patient satisfaction, and more importantly, at a lower cost. So keep in mind that when we're looking, and it is upon us as legislators to make sure that the public at risk is absolutely sacrosanct. But more importantly, there's several things that I look at when I introduce a piece of legislation like this. Number one, that profession, at a national level, do they have some type of national board or standard where there's the educational level is justifiable? The second thing, is it done in another state or other states and evidence that shows that it's safe, or, for example, in the Indian Health Services or in the federal government? And many professions, for example, have expanded scopes of practice in those particular settings like the federal government or the Indian Health Services with safe outcomes. But I think the absolute most important thing that we need to keep in mind is that that prospective profession has an independent board that oversees that profession, for example, like the nursing board, the pharmacy board, the dental board, the medical board, the optometry board, and it is that consumer board that ultimately protects the patient or the consumer, and it is the legislative body, which is through what's called the Business and Profession Committee, that regulates and makes sure and oversees those particular boards to make sure that they're doing their job. And finally, if you look at nurse practitioners that currently are allowed to have independent practice in other states, their malpractice insurance is amongst the lowest in the country with amongst their professions or their colleagues, and there's very few, if any, malpractice cases against these particular providers, just like other professionals that have had increased scopes of practice within their prospective professions.
Well, let me put this question to Paul Finney. You mentioned earlier knee pain. As common as that is, aren't we really talking about, say, optometrists checking for high blood pressure, pharmacists ordering lab tests to detect diabetes, things like that?
Well, the pharmacy bill and the optometry bill are separate issues, and I think what we're really talking about here today is the nurse practitioner issue. And I'd like to comment on a couple of things that the senator said. One is that he mentioned that nurse practitioners are just as qualified as physicians, and actually that's blatantly false. The training that nurse practitioners get is on the order of 2,000 to 3,000 hours, where the training that physicians get is on the order of 20,000 to 30,000 hours. There's a huge, huge difference in the extent of training. He mentioned that 17 states in the nation allow independent practice, and actually that also means that 33 states don't allow independent practice there. If you look at states, the large states, sort of like California, for example, Florida, Texas have restricted practice, as do New York, Pennsylvania, Minnesota. The large majority of states in the country do not allow fully independent practice, and we see no signs that that's going to change anytime soon. He mentioned that the Board of Nursing oversees the work of nurse practitioners. And one of the concerns that we have is that if roughly 14,000 nurse practitioners are granted independent practice authority, they would be able to prescribe opioid drugs with no supervision. As you know, we're in the middle of an opioid epidemic, accidental overdose deaths on the rise. The Registered Board of Nursing in California is in no way equipped to handle the oversight needed in dealing with nurse practitioners who would be able to prescribe opioid drugs and potentially put patients in serious harm. And finally, the medical liability issue. I think the data is mixed out there. There is data out there that contradicts what the senator just told you, and in which the nurse practitioners actually payouts are higher than those of physicians. We have a lot of concerns about this, and you know, our focus is that as we move towards creating more access, as millions of more Californians come into coverage, we need to figure out how to do things in new ways. And, you know, there's an old adage that two heads are better than one. And physicians and nurse practitioners working in teams are better than if than working totally independently. They're going to be able to be more efficient. And again, when I work with a nurse practitioner, and I have worked with nurse practitioners for 30 years, and actually as a chief of pediatrics, supervised them administratively for a decade and a half. What we found was that working together with them, we can help expand the level of education and training they have and actually make them more effective than they would be if, for example, a nurse practitioner, you know, on Union Street moved up to Red Bluff, which I seriously doubt is going to happen to address the issues of access to care in rural areas that Senator Hernandez mentioned.
Well, given that only 16 of the state's 58 counties have what is considered the ideal supply of primary care physicians, what new ways are you thinking of, if not this? Like, might we be considering perhaps a team where the primary care physician is on call, available by phone for when that knee pain question comes up, and then, you know, allowing the simpler aspects of primary care to take place without that doctor in physically in the office?
Sure. Well, let me give you another example. And, you know, the abilities with telemedicine and all sorts of things really allow us to construct teams in much more effective ways over distances, for example, than we have been able to do in the past. But the example I'd like to give you is that of pediatric diabetes care. I've been a doctor for 30 years, and early in my practice, primary care doctors on pediatrics handled all their own diabetes patients. We did it pretty well, but none of us had more than, you know, a dozen or so, maybe a couple of dozen diabetes patients. And what we found as the number of pediatric diabetes patients increased was we had an access problem. What we've done in the large integrated group setting I work in is created pediatric diabetes teams that are headed by a physician, which is vital given the expanded differential diagnosis that sometimes comes into play to keep the patient safe and the care appropriate, but headed by a physician, but also with nurse practitioners, social workers, physical therapists, a whole team of people that together manage the care of pediatric diabetes patients. And I can tell you from my 30 years of experience as a doctor that today, in the setting I work in, we handle our pediatric diabetes patients using pediatric diabetes teams at higher quality, more safely, more efficiently, at lower cost than we did when we were trying to do it independently. It's the team approach to access that really is vital. And granting nurse practitioners independent practice authority moves us in the direction of fragmenting care when we really must be moving in the direction of more collaboration, more teamwork, if we're going to accomplish and leverage the skills of all of us. We need more doctors, but we also need more nurse practitioners, and this is a way we can do that effectively.
What do you say to that, Senator Hernandez?
You know, I agree totally. If you look at how our healthcare system has been set up, but more importantly, how it's moving towards, it has been and it continues to move towards working in teams. You look at what the federal government has done in the Affordable Care Act. It's talked about the ACO model to allow groups to work in collaboration, similar to like a closed system like Kaiser, so that they can work more efficiently. But keep in mind, every professional, not just physicians, every professional that is trained and taught, whether it's a dentist, an optometrist, a podiatrist, a nurse practitioner, a physician, surgeons, and even amongst physicians who are primary care providers who don't have specialty care, understand that what they do is when a patient comes in and they're outside of their scope of practice, it is their responsibility to transfer that patient or refer that patient to the appropriate health care provider. And there's even primary care providers who need to do the exact same thing to refer those patients to specialty care. This is not going to change that system at all. It's going to allow nurse practitioners to go into communities where they're not capable of going in to provide that care. The other concern that I have that we need to mention is that the fact that very few physicians take Medi-Cal, and more of the non-physician providers have a tendency to take Medi-Cal at a much higher rate. And he made a comment with regard to there's no guarantee that these nurse practitioners will go into the rural areas. The problem we have now is a nurse practitioner has to be associated with a physician. So if a physician is not taking Medi-Cal or not going to his particular communities, the nurse practitioner cannot. There have been studies that have shown that in the states, for example, like Arizona, where they have had the independent practice with one of the more liberal bills in the United States with regard to the nurse practitioners, it has actually been a job creator for that profession. More nurse practitioners gravitated towards that state. They did some studies which showed after the bill was put into law that there was more nurse practitioners, and I think in particular the rural areas, there was an increase by 72 to 74% of nurse practitioners increase in those particular areas. So by having more providers to have access to be able to take these services, we're now going to be able to address the most neediest and the most vulnerable population. So when you have the Medicaid expansion where you're going to have 1.5 million new Californians, they need to be able to have access to primary care just like everyone else. So I agree totally with Dr. Finney. The system needs to be coordinated. The system needs to work in teams.
Senator, we're going to have to say thank you as we're going into a break. We're talking about legislation that would expand the kind of care California nurses and pharmacists can give in a time of widespread doctor shortages. Join our conversation, 866-733-6786. We'll be back in just a moment. This is Forum on KQED Public Radio. I'm Rachel Miro. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Rachel Miro, sitting in for Dave Iverson. This hour, we're talking about who gives what kind of care in California. The rollout of the Affordable Care Act is already underway in this state, but there's wide agreement there aren't enough doctors to meet the current demand, let alone the expanding demand coming in January. Is the answer to expand who can give the kind of care that primary care physicians typically give now? That's what we're talking about with Dr. Paul Finney, who's a a Sacramento-based pediatrician and president of the California Medical Association, and also now joining us by phone, Deborah Bakurgian, senior director of nurse practitioner physicians assistants, clinical education and practice, and assistant adjunct professor at the University of California at Davis, the School of Nursing there. Thank you for joining us, Deborah.
Thank you for having me.
So I guess let me throw to you. You know, we've heard in the last half hour about three different bills, each of which would expand what it is that can be delivered, provided by nurse practitioners and pharmacists and optometrists. Although that might be coming later. There's also, I understand it, another bill in the state senate that would expand services that physician assistants can provide. What's your sense of whether this is the right way to go about dealing with a primary care doctor shortage in California?
Well, first let me say, before I even get started, that that I have been a nurse practitioner for over 20 years, almost 25 years, as a matter of fact, and have worked collaboratively with my physician colleagues for all of those years, and believe, as Dr. Finney has said, and also as Dr. Hernandez has said, that interprofessional teams is absolutely the way to go. I want to pick up on what Dr. Hernandez spoke about just before the break in the fact that part of the issue we have in terms of access is that nurse practitioners are mostly invisible to the public. So while physicians appear on private insurance panels and that sort of thing, many panels do not list nurse practitioners as primary care providers. Dr. Hernandez mentioned the fact that nurse practitioners have to go where the physician is, and that is true. And so that is part of the problem of access as well. This bill would help to relieve that. But it does not mean having nurse practitioners have independent practice. What it really reflects is the fact that we can be more visible to consumers and to patients who need care. But it does not mean that we will practice in a silo, which is somewhat what physicians have been trying to say, that that's what would happen. Nurse practitioners come to our role as nurse practitioners, having been a registered nurse for many years. We started out being the glue in the hospital setting, often advocating for patients, making sure that physician orders were carried out, that sort of thing. We have always been team players. We have thousands and thousands of hours of practicing as a nurse, most of us, not every single one, but most of us have that before we come into our NP education and practice. So we bring with us a great deal of experience with patients already and a general knowledge of healthcare. And so, you know, from that perspective, I think I guess I get a little disturbed when people talk about that we're not educated.
Can you explain for us what it is exactly we're talking about? Because I think most people are aware there is a team providing healthcare when they walk into a primary care office. What is it that nurse practitioners are not doing now that they might do if these bills make it into law?
I don't think that nurse practitioners would do anything differently than what they're doing now. We would continue to do the same kind of thing. What we could do, though, is that we could expand and provide access to care to people who don't have it already. So, for example, Dr. Hernandez mentioned the fact that if you have to go where the physician is, and you basically, how this works is a nurse practitioner gets employed by a physician and then works under the structures of that physician. If that physician accepts Medi-Cal, then they accept Medi-Cal. If that physician accepts Medicare, they accept Medicare. So what the bill would allow is a nurse practitioner could, still working with that physician as a collaborative partner, but accept the Medi-Cal patients, accept patients who maybe have no insurance, could provide more comprehensive care if they choose to do that. In other words, spend more time with the patient, which is typical. Most nurse practitioners tend to do that more so than physicians. That actually is a good partnership, because what that allows physicians to do is to do their higher level of of work with patients, which we all recognize that there is that need. So nurse practitioners are not coming to the table wanting to be independent and never work with a physician again. That's not the case at all. We want to continue being a part of a team, but the requirement to be a part of a team should be required for every profession. Physicians should be required to be part of a team as well. So if we're required to be a part of a team, that's fine. That does not mean that we need supervision for our own practice, because we're educated to practice at a level that is commensurate with the work that we do.
So let me jump in here and send us back to the phones. We've got Peter in San Jose.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call, Rachel. And I wanted to say that I think the points everybody is redirecting to Dr. Finney are great. I couldn't understand where his emphasis was. I understand he's in a debate trying to emphasize a position, but my wife's a registered nurse pursuing an advanced degree, and the quality of care that she's trained to give and that she's pursuing are really exactly what's needed. We had our first child in Kaiser under the HMO plan. The only time we saw an OB was 5 minutes in the delivery room. The entire pregnancy care and everything were done under a nurse midwife, which is an advanced nursing degree, and it was wonderful. We're having our second child now in a PPO healthcare plan that requires us to see an OB for every appointment, and it's harder to get the appointments. And I don't even think the quality of care is as high as it was with the nurse midwife. And that kind of takes me to my question, which is, how are insurance plans going to be pushed to allow nurse practitioner or nurse midwife care when that's what people want? And if they can't get it, then they're still stuck with an OB.
Well, let's put that question to Paul Finney. What's your understanding of what sort of resources people will have or what flexibility they'll have to choose what kind of care they want?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that the caller, that I'm very pleased that they had a great delivery and a normal baby. And many normal pregnancies and deliveries are handled very, very well by nurse practitioners whom I agree have great skills for taking care of normal types of things like a pregnancy and even some parts of the early part of the delivery. But what I worry about is when something goes wrong. What happens when the fetal heart rate goes down and there develops a problem? What happens in a pregnancy that turns out to be an ectopic pregnancy or a twin pregnancy? Then you need skills that go well beyond the training and experience of nurse practitioners, which, although very, very good, is not broad and comprehensive enough to really handle the very difficult, very dangerous, and sometimes life-threatening things that can come up. Now, we all want normal pregnancies and deliveries, and I'm really pleased that the caller has enjoyed that experience. It's what we all want for our families. But it doesn't always turn out that way. And if nurse practitioners are practicing independently, our fear is that that may put patients in harm's way and end up with a result that is bad that could have been prevented. I'd also like to say that the point was made that dissociating nurse practitioners from working with a physician would allow them to go into rural areas. And I just don't see that happening. California's Medi-Cal rates, if you're talking about payment, as the caller was, are the lowest in the nation. It's very, very difficult for physicians to make a living going way off into deep into rural areas. Nurse practitioners would be subject to the same pressures of the lowest Medi-Cal rates in the nation. And I just don't see that, again, they're going to flock from Union Street up to Red Bluff or way out into the hinterlands to provide care. I'm sure they would like to, as many physicians would, but it's economically untenable in a state like California where the reimbursement rates are so low. And in states like Arizona that Mr. Hernandez, the senator, brought up, if you look at states like that in which do grant nurse practitioners independent practice authority, what you find is that the nurse practitioners the map of where they locate themselves is almost identical to the map of where physicians locate themselves. And there may be other reasons that access in the state has increased. Maybe there are more nurse practitioners and more physicians as well. But they locate in the same places and don't go out to the rural areas in the way that everyone hopes might happen. And if independent practice authority is granted in California, I think the payment rates for Medi-Cal patients in particular, as Mr. Hernandez, the senator, brought up, just won't allow nurse practitioners to have practices that would be economically viable any more than physicians would.
Let me put that question to Deborah Bukurgian. Is it true that nurse practitioners are not seeking out in the states where they can areas and populations that are not being served by primary care physicians now?
Well, what I would say, Rachel, is that there's no way either I nor Dr. Finney could predict that. But what I can tell you is what we have seen of our own students here at UC Davis. We have a very high rate, in fact, one of the highest rates in the country, of having our nurse practitioners and physician assistants go into primary care and stay in primary care and also go into rural and underserved areas. So almost two-thirds of our graduates go into those areas. I think the issue is that it would be very difficult for anybody to survive solely on Medi-Cal rates. But just because somebody lives in a rural area, a very rural area, doesn't mean that they're only going to have Medi-Cal. They will have their, you know, every county has a mixture of kind of insured patients. But even if the proponent, the majority of those patients are Medi-Cal, nurse practitioners can probably manage that better financially, economically, because they don't take on the level of debt that our primary care physicians have. So, you know, there's various ways to think of that, and we can't predict it. But here at UC Davis in particular, we stress very highly the need for our graduates to go in those areas. We provide a lot of rotations in rural areas so that they get that experience. And what we find is that once they get there and they learn about the community, they love the community, they often will stay there. And I can tell you that the demand for nurse practitioners and physician assistants in those rural areas is very high. We've been working with the American Hospital Association, and they really want our students, our graduates, to come into those areas. So we can't predict it. I mean, we don't have a crystal ball, but we can look at what's happened in other areas. We can look what's happening within our own graduates, and we can continue to encourage that. Let me say also that
all
if
right,
they
quickly
go
now.
There, yeah, 1 minute. If they go there, then we want them to collaborate with whoever else is in that area. We want them to use telehealth. We're teaching that in our curriculum now.
So let's go to Jeffrey, or rather not go to, I'll explain. He's written in or emailed. I am a physician, and I volunteered in Amazon, Brazil, Haiti, native Canada, and Japan after the earthquake. If this law does get passed and allows nurse practitioners independence in the geographic areas described, then the patients will be better off. I found in my volunteer efforts when I struggled with my inadequacy to manage the complex problems in those areas that the alternative for that patient in front of me was no care. But let's not be fooled. This is a lower care. This is a lower level of care based on training of physicians versus nurse practitioners. Yes, care in this country is tiered, whether we like it or not. There seems to be like a general range of agreement that there are large parts of California where the care is simply not equal to what it is in wealthy coastal districts.
And I would say that's very true, and the California Medical Association has been working along a number of fronts to address that problem, and we look forward to teaming up with our nurse practitioner colleagues to address that issue further as we go along. One example of a program that we put together and got moved through the legislature is the Steve Thompson Loan Repayment Program, which repays up to $105,000 worth of medical students' loans, which you may know, can get up to as high as $300,000 or $400,000 by the end of medical school, but will repay a significant portion of those loans for an agreement from the medical students to serve as physicians in underserved areas for a period of 3 years. And that has been very successful in helping to address part of the disparity of care for rural areas. We've also gotten passed through the legislature support for the UC Riverside School of Medicine, which, like UC Davis, which I love, as a doctor, I train many of the medical students and residents in pediatrics that come through my clinics. And I love doing that. But UC Davis and UC Riverside are both very heavily oriented towards disparity of care in rural areas and helping to direct more funding and get the UC Riverside School of Medicine up and running has been another effort of physicians in California towards helping to solve that problem. So we have a long way to go, as Deborah said, and physicians look very much forward to working with our nurse practitioner colleagues and our PA colleagues as well in helping to address that problem.
But let's turn now to the phones now. I recognize there are a lot of different points to be made, but we want to share the conversation with our listeners. Aurora in Berkeley.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm a psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner, and I practice in a very poor, underserved urban area in Oakland, mostly with Latino clients. I work with children right now, but previously I worked with severely mentally ill adults as well as children. And I spent many months as psychiatric consult liaison for all primary care services, including physicians, in our clinics. I was also HIV consult liaisons. Currently, my job includes training residents, pediatricians, in primary care psychiatry. So I collaborate with my psychiatrist colleagues, but I also am often helping in the training process for these residents, for NP students as well. What I see is that there is a huge waiting list and a huge shortage of people who are able to provide care to our poorest and neediest families, especially our Spanish-speaking families in our urban area. And oftentimes our waiting list can be up to a year to get these severely mentally ill children or children with mental health issues into the clinic, as well as adults. So my colleague and myself, almost all of us have gone into serving Medi-Cal and underinsured and uninsured populations and in both urban and rural areas. The problem is that we often cannot get physicians to collaborate with us. So we need to have a physician who signs off that they are supervising us even from afar, but there are often no physicians available to do that. So that means that we cannot practice to the full scope of our practice, and we cannot get in these patients who really need our help desperately.
Thank you so much, Aurora. Very good point. And talking about another particular arena of the medical healthcare system that is just sadly lacking in the state, mental health care. Jennifer from San Francisco writes, I was trained as an advanced practice nurse, clinical nurse specialist, alongside many nurse practitioners. I currently work as a registered nurse in a hospital setting with both physicians and nurse midwives who are nurse practitioners. When I seek out healthcare providers, I am always very hesitant to choose a nurse practitioner to provide my own care. Upon examination of this tendency, I believe this is because of the underlying knowledge I have of the rigor of the education and training of medical doctors over nurse practitioners and their respective behavior knowledge in emergency situations. Deborah Bakurjian, is it your sense? I mean, are we basically talking about accepting a lower tier of care for people who live in poor and rural areas?
Well, I think the facts are that there is a lesser tier. It's lesser care because there's less access to care. The quality of the care that nurse practitioners provide is really very high, and all the studies have shown that. But we're talking about, Dr. Finney mentioned earlier that those emergent services situations, and those do come up. But nurse practitioners are trained to recognize when there are problems and refer those problems out. And so this issue that if there's an emergency, there's going to be a terrible problem and there's going to be a very poor outcome, as a general rule, does not even make sense. We all refer, including physicians, when it's out of their scope of practice. So as a pediatrician, Dr. Finney would refer somebody to a pediatric neurologist if there was a neurology issue that he could not handle in his own practice. And we all do the same thing. All healthcare professionals do the same thing. I do want to say that this issue of tiered care, we have that in existence now, and it isn't because of nurse practitioners. It is because of payment, which is something that Dr. Finney also talked about as well. But it's also because of physicians who have the choice to take Medicare or Medi-Cal, choose not to, and that ties nurse practitioners' hands.
Well, that's a question I'll put to you, Paul Finney. I mean, yeah, everybody knows Medi-Cal reimbursements are just underwhelming, if not economically unfeasible for most doctors. In that economic climate, do you still think it's unwise to consider legislation like the legislation put forward by Senator Hernandez?
Well, I think we have a big access problem, and we do with Medi-Cal being expanded in our state and millions more people coming into Medi-Cal, we need to figure out ways to provide care for those people. And I think the way to do that is in high performance teams, as I described with the pediatric diabetes teams earlier in the hour. We need to look at new ways to deliver care. It should be team based. It should be collaborative. And I think if we do that, we'll be able to begin to manage all these patients that we very much want to come into coverage, and so that we can take care of their health needs.
Well, a few more comments now from folks writing in. Mike writes on the forum Facebook page, pharmacists know more about drug interactions than doctors and catch mistakes. Optometrists look at eyes all day long. People use doctors way too much for all kinds of minor things like backaches and colds, and it costs us all a fortune. Somebody here, Eileen, writes, isn't the real issue that medical students are not going into primary care? How can we create incentives for medical students to pursue a career as a primary care doctor? If Medicare paid well, it wouldn't be an issue. It seems logical that in the meantime, nurses would work in teams with a doctor's oversight. Dr. Finney, you know, you mentioned earlier UC Riverside, the first medical school to open in California in 40 years, just opened this week. They've got 50 students, very excited, half of them from the local area, the Inland Empire. That just doesn't seem like enough with the Affordable Care Act coming and thousands, hundreds of thousands of new people wanting to get primary care in some place other than an emergency room.
Yeah, it's a start. And again, we need to not only look for opportunities to provide incentives for people to young physicians to go to underserved areas, as I described with the Steve Thompson Loan Repayment Program, and with programs like UCD and UC Riverside that tend to promote activity in primary care in those areas, but we need to do more. And I think the way to do more is to look for new opportunities for collaboration and team building, high performance teams that leverage the wonderful skills that doctors and nurse practitioners and medical assistants and PAs all have to do that. If we don't work together to do this, we're not going to solve the access problems. The nurse practitioners that I work with in my practice are seeing full schedules already now. They're very, very busy, and they're wonderful at what they do. I wouldn't give them up in a moment. But if you grant them independent practice, they're still going to be busy. It's not going to create any more access, and then they can't see any more patients when they have a full schedule than they already do. And granting them independent practice won't change a thing for the nurse practitioner I work with. And again, they won't go to rural areas for the economic reasons we talked about before. So we need to think of new ways to do that, and I believe that collaboration and new kinds of teams is the answer. Granting independent practice authority to nurse practitioners and further fragmenting the system really doesn't accomplish anything in terms of access, and I believe that it puts patients in harm's way.
Deborah Bakurjian, we've just got a little bit of time left. Any last thoughts as we wrap up this hour?
Yeah, just a couple of things. Thank you very much. I couldn't agree more with Dr. Finney about having teams. I think we are going towards teams. There's no doubt about it. I think that is an absolutely separate issue from independence. It's a separate issue from access right now because the whole team-based first of all, we have to learn how to teach people how to work in teams. We do that quite well in nursing school. We do that. We're really doing that very effectively here at UC Davis with our students being educated right next to the medical students in some classes over throughout the whole two-year period that they are here. They're learning with the medical students. So, you know, having that foundation will help us on the team side of the house, but that isn't going to help us with access, and it's going to take a long time to get that done. But what we can do right now is to pass this bill, allow nurse practitioners to be able to be visible to those patients who do not have primary care, and allow nurse practitioners to do what they've done very well for the entire time that we've been in existence, and that is to collaborate highly with all of our health profession colleagues, including pharmacists, optometrists, psychiatrists, physicians, therapists. We teach collaboration right in our coursework, and so
thank you
so
much.
Well.
That's Deborah Bakurjian, Senior Director of Nurse Practitioner Physicians Assistant Clinical Education and Practice at UC Davis. Also thanks to Dr. Paul Finney, Sacramento-based pediatrician and president of the California Medical Association. The conversation continues on the forum Facebook page. Make sure to add your comments and thoughts. We'll be back in just a moment. This is Forum on KQED Public Radio. I'm Rachel Miro.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.